Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our Bible class on the life of David. Today we are in lesson 3, looking at 1 Samuel chapter 17, and that is the story of David and Goliath. I know I want to begin with a reminder of our last class. God said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." That's 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. You know, this statement is so important. God is reminding Samuel as he's looking at Jesse's oldest son, "Don't be so impressed with the outward appearance. I don't see as man sees. I see at the heart." Well, if God's statement ever applied, "God sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, the Lord looks at the heart." If that statement ever applied in this next chapter of 1 Samuel 17, it applies here in the battle against Goliath. You see, 1 Samuel 17 opens up, and the Philistines and the Israelites are gathered together at Soko for a battle, verse 1. And so they're camped out on either side of this valley of Elah, verse 2 and 3. And one writer puts it this way. He kind of paints the picture as to what's going on here. He says, "The valley of Elah was not a narrow ravine, but more like a vast canyon. The ancient site was probably about a mile wide, and toward the mouth of the canyon, it opened up even wider. At the bottom of the canyon or ravine, between the slopes, was the stream bed where David found the stones for his sling. To one side was a great slope, half a mile or more in size. Opposite was another vast slope, or another half mile, stretching a full mile across. Bivouacked on one slope was the army of Israel, and on the other, the army of the Philistines." So get this picture. You got this valley, and on each side are the two armies. You have Israel and the Philistines. And here the two armies stand, ready for battle, and nothing takes place. In fact, for 40 days, as you see in verse 16, for 40 days, nothing has taken place. There's no fighting. It's a standstill. And there's one big reason why. His name was Goliath. His name is Goliath, the champion of the Philistines. Look at verse 4. It says, "The champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in the span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed in scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs, and a bronze javelin swung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, 'Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us.' Again, the Philistine said, 'I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together.'" Got this Goliath. Boy, he's terrifying. He's fearful. One reason is his size. And Goliath is literally a giant. He wasn't the first giant that Israel faced. I mean, you remember when Moses sent the spies into Canaan, their report said that we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight, in Numbers 13, verse 33. Og, the king of Bashan, is described in Deuteronomy 3, verse 11 and verse 13 as a giant. Well, Goliath stands, he was about 6 cubits in a span. So a cubit is measured from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger. It's around somewhere around 18 inches typically. And so Goliath was roughly somewhere around 9 foot 9. That's huge. I mean, do you know anyone 9 foot 9? No, it's huge. And so one reason he's so fearful is just literally because he's huge. He's big. Another reason is how he's dressed. He's dressed in his battle array. You see that described in verse 5 to 7. A bronze helmet, scale armor, bronze greaves, his shin guards, bronze javelin, a spear, and a shield. We're not even told about his sword at this point. And then when you consider all the armor he was wearing, he wore somewhere around 175 to 200 pounds of armor. That's more than some men can lift. That's more than some men weigh, 175 to 200 pounds. The head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron, and that's somewhere around 20 to 25 pounds. And so just the head of his spear, the pointed head, is about 25 pounds. Most of those guys coming out in serious armor, and it's showing the serious measure of his strength. But then you also have what he's saying, the message that he is shouting to the armies of Israel. Firstly, you see the challenge. The challenge that he issues is as man-on-man combat. It's a contest of champions. Being called the champion of the Philistines was a way of saying that he was their representative, the one who acts on behalf of others. And so his challenge was a one-on-one battle, a one-on-one battle that would determine the war. And he was the one chosen from the Philistines. So you'd have one from the Philistines, one from the Israel, and they would fight, and whoever won, won the battle, won the war. Well, it's one thing to have an army go up against Goliath. It's one thing to have a group of men stand with you and to face the giant, but boy, to go one-on-one. You also see what he says is he defies or reproach or scorn, depends on your translation. He defies the ranks of Israel. He is taunting. He is humiliating. He is casting insults. And you notice, what's Israel's response to everything he is saying? Look at verse 11. Saul and all of Israel were dismayed and greatly afraid. I mean, you might ask, where's Saul? Where's their king? They wanted a king to go and fight their battles. Well, where's their king? Where's their fearless leader? Well, Israel is cowering behind their cowardly leader. They're cowering in fear. And then verse 16, this took place not for a week, not for 2 weeks. This took place for 40 days. This giant is taunting Israel. The two armies are at a standstill because this giant mocks. This giant is instilling nothing but fear in the hearts and the ranks of Israel. You know, just to maybe hit pause for a minute. All of us face Goliaths. We all have them. We all have giants in our lives. Giants that cause us to cower in fear and that overcome us with worry. You know, sometimes it's imaginary giants. It's the what if game we play about the future, the worry about things we can't control. Oh, we worry about our health, and we worry about the job, and we worry about the economy. Today, we're worried about COVID-19, how long it's going to last, what it's going to do, what long-term effects it's going to bring. We worry about our children. We worry about our grandchildren. We just sometimes one of the giants in our lives is just the fear of the unknown. Sometimes it's internal things, internal struggles, internal diseases of the heart, jealousy, selfishness, rudeness, laziness. Maybe a lasting, lingering doubt, questioning our faith and never coming to a solid conclusion. Maybe it's just exploding anger. And just we just can't ever seem to get control of our temper. Maybe it's a lustful heart, and that just seems to always plague me. It's in my mind, just rushes to impure thoughts. Maybe it's external things, like Israel. Maybe it is a bully, someone in our lives. Maybe it's a boss or a family member or a neighbor or just people in my life who just we just make things miserable. One writer said this way, so your Goliath may be wielding weapons of unemployment, abandonment, depression, or fear. Your Goliath may be brandishing blades of selfishness, laziness, impure thoughts, and immoral actions. He doesn't parade up and down the hills of Elah, but he storms through your office, your bedroom, your classroom. He brings bills that you can't pay, grades that you can't make, people that you can't please, whiskey you can't resist, pornography that you can't refuse, a career you can't escape, a past you can't shake, a future you can't face. Isn't that true? Let me ask yourself. Ask yourself today, what are you most afraid of? What are your greatest fears? Is it your health? Is it getting sick? Is it losing your job? Is it your family? Is it children walking away from the Lord? Is it death? You know, something we learn about giants is that they often seem a lot larger than we are. And what we see here is that they just don't go away. Israel was reminded of Goliath every morning and evening for 40 days. And there are times that we are reminded of the things that we fear the most for a long time, for days, for months, for years. Fear left unchecked fear allowed to run free in our lives? Well, we let our giants win when we remain in the camp. When we cower in fear, hoping he's just going to go away, rather than facing our fears, facing our giants, and claiming the victory, not because we're so strong. It was claiming the victory that's promised and found in God. Well, so what happens here? All the way up to 11, Israel's cowering in fear. Well, the hero arrives on the scene, not knowing that he's going to be the hero that day. David arrives, coming to bring food to his brothers, as he was instructed. This is all kind of detailed out in verse 12 to 22. So David arrives to bring relief to his brothers who are fighting in the war. Remember, he is the youngest in his family. And so his father sends him on relief from his shepherding duty to go and care for, to take a care package to his brothers. And so when David arrives, he hears Goliath. Goliath hasn't stopped. He hears Goliath and he hears what he is saying. And you notice David's response. You see, Israel has heard these taunts, these same taunts from the same man, for the past 40 days, and they flee in fear. David hears them once, and look at verse 23. It says, as David he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines. And when he spoke these same words, David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him, and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. But look at verse 26. David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? Isn't that amazing? Israel's heard it for 40 days, and they cower in fear. David hears it once. He's furious. He says, who's going to shut that guy up? Well, why are we allowing a man to say such blasphemous things about the armies of the living God? We have the living God on our side. Who's going to go down there and put an end to him? Something great about David. Greater than the size of Goliath. What's great about David was not the size of his muscles. No, it was his faith in God. And so, right to David's question, Saul had given an incentive to Israel, to the armies, for any man who was willing to go and fight against Goliath. The incentive was riches. He'd be given riches. He would be allowed to marry Saul's daughter. And imagine, you're then marrying into the royal family. It comes with some privileges. And then his family, the person who would fight against Goliath, his family would be free from taxes. Well, that's a lot of good benefits there to going out and fighting Goliath. But that tells you something, doesn't it? Rather than Saul, the leader, going down and fight Goliath, he gives all these high incentives to someone else. Let someone else do it. I'm going to try and bribe someone else to step into the role I should be filling. Well, David's heard enough. He's ready to go. So he asks the question, what's promised to the one who's going to go and take down Goliath? Well, before he takes him on, before David takes on Goliath, he receives two discouraging comments. The first comes from his older brother, Eliab. That's down in verse 28. Verse 28 says, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard what he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David. And he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. Man, that's some pretty heated language there, isn't it? Very condescending, very, very negative, very accusatory. It might have been out of jealousy. You know, here's the older brother who was a soldier who was cowering in fear for 40 days, and his youngest brother, who is not a soldier, shows up, and he displays immediate courage. You know, it might also be not just jealousy initially here, because David's showing a courage that Eliab did not have. It might also be part of what happened in the last chapter. You see, it might be out of the jealousy and hurt over what took place when Samuel arrived and anointed David, not Eliab, but David, the youngest, as the future king of Israel. So David receives discouragement from his older brother. And then the second form of discouragement came from the king. King Saul, verse 32. See, David went to Saul, verse 32. He said, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight against the Philistines." Well, and that's what Saul said. Saul's been looking for someone to do this. Saul says to David, he says, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth. Well, he has been a warrior from his youth." He said, "You can't do this. What do you think you are? He's older than you. He's more experienced than you. You can't do it. You can't do it." But David responds. David responds showing three things about his heart. One, he took the taunting of God as a personal offense. Look at that, verse 36. He took Goliath's taunting personally. Goliath disdained the living God. David took that personally. Secondly, he attributed his earlier victories that he had achieved out in the wilderness protecting sheep. He attributed them as victories that God gave. The victories as a deliverance from the Lord. You look at verse 34. "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he taunted the armies of the living God." See verse 37. "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." So David understood. It's amazing. Kind of just read over this as information. And it is. We're catching the history. Sometimes you just need to slow down and catch what he's saying. He fought off a bear. He fought off a lion. A lion. He grabbed it by the beard and beat it to death. Isn't that amazing to you? It's immense courage and strength. But David shows us how. The reason he was able to do so, he attributed it to the Lord. God delivered him from the lion. God delivered him from the bear. And it's not going to be any different here. So you see, he is offended. He is jealous for God and God's right standing before the people. He knows that God has delivered him before, and he trusts that God will deliver him again. And you see the third thing about David's heart here is the confidence he has in God's victory. The promise of victory, verse 37, "He will deliver me." God's been with me before. He will be with me again. There's a lesson here. I think there's a valuable lesson. And that sometimes you're going to get discouragement from others, even though you're trying to do the right thing. And David knew who to fight and who to leave alone. And that's an important lesson. You know, it's an important lesson to choose our battles wisely. If we're not careful, all of our battles will be fought among family, among brethren, while the real enemy of our soul, Satan, roams around claiming victory after victory. David didn't argue with his brother. He didn't fight with Saul. No, he knew where the fight belonged, where the real battle belonged. Well, Saul tries to give David his armor. Blindly, he didn't have any. David didn't have any armor with him. Remember, he just came to drop off food. Well, David refuses. He's not going to fit in Saul's armor. He's not even tested it. And so he goes out and he goes into battle. He goes with nothing but a sling, a stick, and five smooth stones that he's picked up along the way. See, he hadn't really used Saul's weapons, Saul's armors. So he would have been unprepared for battle using those. But he knew something about slings. Seems to be his weapon of choice while out protecting sheep. You know, in some ways you think a sling can't quite compare with a sword and a shield, but you know, there's a devastating blow that a smooth stone sailing through the air with accuracy can do when it crushes the right person at the right angle. It can bring a great damage, and we're going to see that here. Goliath and David finally meet. They meet face to face, and Goliath just mocks him. All he sees is a boy. He sees a boy with a stick and a sling, and so you look at verse 42. He says, "When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance." And David, or the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." What? You sent me a kid. You sent me a baby. It's gonna be over before you know it. Come up here. Go ahead. Go ahead. Come on out here, and I'm gonna feed you. I'm gonna tear you limb from limb. What's amazing, though? Notice. You notice what Goliath said about David. Now, notice what David says about Goliath, and compare that with how many times he mentions God. Notice. We're gonna read David's speech here. Notice what he says about Goliath. And notice how many times in his speech he mentions God. Starting in verse 45. David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly may know that the Lord is not delivered by a sword or spear, but the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Oh, he's not shaken. David didn't flinch. Philistine said, "I'm going to rip you limb from limb." And David says, "No, here's what's going to happen. God's giving you into my hands. You and all these men here are finished. And all the camp back there are going to see for themselves. It's not about the size of your army. It's not about the strength of your weaponry. No, the battle belongs to the Lord." And that's the thing. Over and over and over again, here before Goliath, David is praising God. David is attributing strength and victory to God, because David, the man after God's own heart, David has a heart that's focused on God. That's him. He lived ever focused on God. Nope, he was not concerned about Goliath's strength, his size, his weaponry. Goliath has taunted God, and he's going to pay. He's going to pay for that. And the victory will be brought not through brute strength, not through powerful weapons. It's going to be clear to everyone who's going to win this battle, and that's God. The secret to a heart like David's, the secret of David's heart is that he knew the outcome of the battle before it ever began. He knew that the battle belonged to the Lord. He was fighting God's battle. He knew it wasn't going to be won through his strength. He knew it was going to be won through the Lord. So David arose, or Goliath arose, and then David ran. David ran to meet him. David ran, slung that sling, wham, right between the eyes. Hit the giant in the head, and the giant dropped. The rock sank into his head in verse 49. It's a crushing blow. But David quickly follows by grabbing Goliath's sword, and he cuts off his head in verse 50. In doing so, there'd be no question to anyone who saw it. You get hit in the head, and you wonder, is he knocked out? Is he unconscious? David wastes no time. He runs up, he grabs that giant sword, and he chops off the giant's head. And he makes it clear to everyone, this giant is done. He is defeated. And the real strength, the real giant, it's not even Goliath. Oh, no, it's not even David. The real giant is the Lord. Victory belongs to the Lord. And David's victory, look at verse 52. David's victory sparked a bravery in the rest of the soldiers in Israel. Now compare this. Look at verse 52. And compare back with verse 11. Saul has been there since the first day. Saul has been there for 40 days, and Israel cowered in fear. David shows up, and on the same day, the giant falls, and something in Israel changes. They start to become courageous. They grab their swords, and they chase down and defeat the Philistines. The bravery of one spread like a wildfire. There's a lesson there. There's a lesson there. For leaders, for shepherds, they will follow your example. There's a lesson there for moms and for dads leading your homes. There's a lesson for those of you who lead in different areas of life. People will follow your example. People will follow the way that you respond to times of conflict. People will look to you as to how you face moments of crisis or fears. Had Saul risen up with faith in God, well, that would have been a different story. The battle could have changed 40 days ago. Didn't happen. David shows up, and there's a true leader who shows no fear, who put his faith in the right source and in the Lord. Now, when we look at this and we read the story, there's a sense in which we look at David and we are drawn to emulate his example. Because here is someone who showed such a sincere, genuine, zealous faith in God and a jealousy for God. He's not going to let someone just walk all over the name of the Lord. He's going to protect it. And so in many ways, you look at this and the story highlights why he is a man after God's own heart. But don't confuse here, as some have. We use that phrase, the David and Goliath story, as if David is the real hero here, because he's not. While certainly he was a crucial instrument in this victory, the real victory is from the Lord, and David knew that. David knew it coming in. Again, back in verse 37, God will deliver you from the hand of this Philistine. David knew it. Now Israel knew it. And hopefully, even Saul was getting a glimpse. The real victory was in the Lord. And it's the same for us today. Our battles that we face day by day, the victories that we are able to claim will not come because we are so great or so strong or so wise. It will come because of the Lord who gives us the strength, the Lord who gives us the victory. Put your faith in the Lord. Put your trust in the Lord. No matter how great your giants may seem, your God is greater. And so just look to him and watch your giants fall one by one. Thank you so much for studying with me. I love this chapter. There's so much here. If there's some things that you saw as we read through this chapter or as you studied on your own, share them with me. Share them with me. Shoot me an email or a message, and I'd love to hear from you and to see what you've learned as we're going through this study. Come back with us. We're going to study in our next lesson what changes in chapter 18 in the life of David. Things are about to change forever for this young man. And so come back with us and study with us, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.